Hello, and welcome to the Smut Show,
a weekly podcast from your new internet book besties.
We discuss all things spicy books and mix in a little bit of motherhood, life, self-care, and everything in between.
So sit back,
grab a beverage,
and let's chat.
Hello, and welcome to the Smut Show. I'm Neely.
And I'm Rachel, and today we have Colleen Conklin on with us. Colleen is a writer and therapist who believes that the best love stories are messy, imperfect, and unfiltered. Originally from New York, she now lives in Nashville with her husband, Sean, who is a touring audio engineer.
She is a proud directioner. Guys, words are hard. And yeah. Harry Styles fangirl at heart. And when she isn't writing, Colleen can be found with a cup of tea and immersed in a good book. Her debut contemporary romance, Ever Since New York, follows a rising pop star and her childhood best friend as they navigate fame, healing, and falling in love on tour. Colleen, we're so happy to have you.
Thank you for being here.
Yes, thank you. So excited to be on the show.
I feel like you'll appreciate this. My daughter's kindergarten teacher is also a Harry Styles fangirl, and there's Harry Styles photos and like word bubbles coming out of his mouth about kindergarten things all over the classroom.
Oh, I love it. That's amazing. Funny.
Yeah. So when in my
to the teacher.
Literally. I think there's one that says like, you can't always get what you want or something.
Yeah.
It's really good. When my son was in kindergarten and had the same teacher, she like went, I think she was going to a Harry Styles concert and took a couple days off school. Shout out. And she's definitely not listening to this. And all their centers, I think I've told you about this, Rachel, were Harry Styles themed centers
day. Love it.
No, that's hilarious. So
that's like one of my good friends. She's taking a break from teaching, but she had been a fourth grade teacher for a while. And she's also a huge Harry Styles fan. And one of her students once came up to her and was like, did you know that Harry Styles was in a band called One Direction? She died.
Yeah.
I think
I'm like a hair, Rachel and I have talked about this. I'm like a hair older. So I was not of the age. Now there's so many One Direction songs I like, so many Harry songs I like. Harry's House is one of my favorite albums. Like it's fine now. But if I had a classroom, I think my pop star theme would be Taylor, obviously.
Oh, yeah, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you a Taylor Swift fan, Colleen?
I am. I'm not like a like diehard fan, but I definitely love her music.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not obsessed. Like, I'm not going to go and do like the like Sonic. Weird sleuthing. I'm not doing it.
Should we get into our ones and fives just
Yes. Because tell me about it.
We are recording this episode on October 1st. Happy October, everybody.
Happy October.
The high today in Texas is 96 degrees.
I haven't even looked at the weather today. That's so
sad.
It's going to
be brutally terrible.
Wow. But I hate that for us.
Get ready to be sick of me, everybody, because in 2 days we get a new Taylor Swift album. And I told Andrew, I was like, just get ready. Your house is about to be Swiftied out.
Because we're going to the movie theater for it. Are you going?
No, because my other five star is that we leave for Europe on Monday. Oh, and so as much as I would love to take Charlotte and go this weekend, she has a soccer game and we're taking the kids to the fair this weekend. It's the only time we can go.
Yeah.
Like with us being gone. And also like last weekend, Andrew and Charlotte were camping. And then we get back from Europe on a Wednesday. And 2 days later, Andrew and Liam go camping for Cub Scouts.
So like a very busy month.
It quite literally, out of the 4 weeks of the fair, there was one day we could go and it's Sunday.
Yeah.
So no movie, because we also have to pack. Like there's just a lot of logistics in leaving your children with your parents for 10 days. Mm-hmm. There's a lot involved in that. My one star.
Yeah. Tell me about it.
Because I know she won't listen. And quite frankly, I don't really give a fuck.
I love this.
Backed out of helping my dad with the kids we're gone for 10 days. And the plan was my dad and stepmom the first 5 days, my mom the second 5 days. Because it's, even though my mom was like, I could do all 10, it's just a lot. Like that's a lot on her to do that alone for 10 days. And my stepmom's just not going to help my dad. My dad has not a once taken care of my children alone.
Are they going to be, I guess she's just not coming over to your house because they're going to stay at your house.
She's just not participating.
That's a choice.
So
that's interesting.
I am now paying a babysitter who I love, and she lives across the street. She babysits all the time. To come every day from when she gets home from school through bedtime to help with dinner, bath, bedtime, and make my kids' lunches for the next day.
I love it. Listen.
So I've I did the troubleshooting with the situation, and I was like, there's a solution.
Yeah.
I have to throw money at the situation to make the solution happen. But I've told my parents, I was like, listen, I just need them alive when I get home.
Yeah. Okay.
I just need them to be.
We can take care of anything else after that.
It's like, if you don't sign folders, if homework doesn't get done, I need them.
They just need to be breathing. We just need to
to be breathing. All the limbs still attached.
Yeah.
No concussion, you know, just like keep them alive, keep them safe, feed them water.
Yeah.
No, do food, what you can.
Food, water, sunlight. They're plants.
Food, water, sunlight.
Really. Yeah.
That's how they thrive.
Yeah.
You know, like we canceled, like we kind of told like piano teacher, like we're going to skip ballet. Yes. Like we're going to skip some activities.
Like I don't even need you to take them to the activities.
I don't need you to take them to the activities. I literally just need them to get to school, get home from school, and be alive.
Yeah.
And also there's fall break during this. Sorry.
Yeah. It'll be fine.
There's 2 days that they're off school because,
you know.
Tell you.
Yeah.
But speaking, going back to Taylor just really quick, because of the clowning, I don't do the clowning. I buy into the clowning.
You know what I mean? Like, you're not going to do it, but you're going to watch every TikTok video of it.
I don't want to spend the time to decode everything, but like I want to hear about it. I want other people to do it, and I just want to benefit from it. Yeah. So if you go to Taylor on Apple Music, the album is Cracking or Hatching right now. And in her letter that she put out a couple months ago when she got her master's out, she said that the Reputation Vault tracks will hatch when things are ready. And so there's so much clowning happening.
Okay. I see that. I can see that though. And sometimes the stuff is very like, I'm like, you really had to reach for that one.
No, there's some clowning because I will clown for anything related to Harry or any of the One Direction boys. Yeah. But there are some things where I'm like, okay, that you're clowning too much. Like that is too far for that to be.
And like we really
reality.
Kind of like okay,
no, that like, I feel like that's plausible.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
That makes sense. And also, I guess people have gone through and listened to the entire Reputation album on Apple. And like all of a sudden, all the words are all in lowercase, except there's certain words that are in all caps through some of the songs. And when you spell it out or when you take them all, it's something like they don't make loyalty like they used to. Is like what it tells out. And here's my thing with Taylor. I think she might be the most brilliant businesswoman.
Yeah.
Of all time, because she knows people will figure it out, and she loves an Easter egg. Like she said it, she's like, I will give the Easter eggs. Like I will make it not obvious, but like I will give you the tools.
There will be signs.
there will be signs. You'll look back and be like, oh, yeah.
And it's kind of like she had posted something like A12. There was like a picture of her at. It was the show I went to in Miami, and it's her looking out at the audience or at like nobody was in there, but it was like section A12, and then she announced the new album on August 12th. So like
that is like also my brain hurts like to be writing all of the songs that she's doing, to be learning like choreography for her show, to be on tour, to be doing all this tour stuff, and to think in advance like, oh, I'm gonna announce this album August 12th, so let me take a picture now.
Albums during that tour, like she went on a tour for about 2 years, had a full ass relationship with Travis Kelce, long distance, and managed to write like 3 albums. Like,
yeah, insane to
do. He does not get the same 24 hours that I get.
I get a
different brand of 24 hours. Because, like, I have a to do list with like 5 things on it, and like 3 of them got done yesterday.
Yeah. So, like, it's really difficult.
They're not
really
the same.
No.
Okay, other people go.
Okay, well, Colleen, do you have any ones and fives? It's up to you. We'll toss them out to you.
Let's see. My one is, I guess, an overshare, a fun. I have IBS and it's been stable for many years, but after a very stressful few weeks, it seems to be flaring, which is fantastic. Mm-hmm. It's also great that it's happening around like a time of a bunch of travel because of book events, and I'm hoping it. Yeah. Hoping it sorts itself out because I'm going to New York in 2 weeks, and like that would not be ideal. So no. we'll see. So that one's definitely a one star, but yes. Five star. I guess back to music. Louis Tomlinson had a song "Lemonade" come out yesterday, and it's super fun. And just always love when any of the 1D boys have music come out, and also that he announced a tour, so that is super exciting for sure. And also that I'm going this Saturday. There's a really cute all romance bookstore in Kentucky called Blush and Bashful. Yeah. I'm doing a signing there, so that should be super fun. I had stopped by there like 2 weeks ago during my release week with my mom because I knew they had it in stock, and it's super cute, so I'm really excited to get to be there for sure.
We love a romance bookstore. Yes, they're so best. I'm like, it's just like, it's for the girlies. And, you know,
I told you this when we did our when we've done like our different stuff at what
Blush.
Thank you.
Yeah,
I'm like, words.
We have one in Dallas called Blush.
All of a sudden I was like, what is a word? Yeah. He was like, he's like, are there like a lot of bookstores like this? I'm like, yes.
Yeah, it's definitely growing.
There's a few websites that have directories of them. Yes. Which is really cool.
Yeah.
I don't know. I like to pretend that we're like part of the, like not just us, but like the evolution of like what's happened over the last several years with romance novels, the
resurgence,
smutty books, all the things, just like podcast, you know, like all the adaptations, which I have to, when we get to things we're watching, we're going to talk about people we meet on vacation adaptation. But I think that it's contributed so much, and it's just like so lovely to go into bookstores like that and you see authors that like, you know, or you've talked to, or like had on the podcast or things like that. And it's like that, like if you had told me that 10 years ago, I would have thought you were insane.
Yeah.
Like that exists, and there's so many of them.
And the book people, and the book people being crazy, and we love it so much.
Oh yes.
Okay, so my one, okay, I don't know what my ones and fives are. I'm sitting here listening to y'all and I'm like, yeah. My one star, I had to wake up early this morning. I am a sleep like whore. I am so protective over my sleep. And if I get less sleep than I deem necessary, then I'm not a fun person to be around. And so I had to, this is just really, it's, I'm going to really bitch and moan here for a second. I had to wake up 30 minutes earlier this morning at 6:15,
difference.
Which Neely's up at like 4 every morning. But I am not. I snooze my alarm. I like roll out of bed at like 6:50 usually and go get the kids. And I'm like, all right, time to get up and rolling. 6:15 this morning because it was picture day for my children and they wanted, me to iron curl their hair. I was like, I'm not correcting you because that's so cute. But we had to wake up early so that we could primp. And isn't that just like womanhood, unfortunately. So, yeah, it was so funny. Like we're all in our primary bathroom is not very big and we're all in there. And me and the two girls, and Brian's just laying on the bed, like chatting with us as we're getting ready. And I was like, I don't like this. Like you just get away there.
Hair though.
Brian will, but he's not going to do hair tools. Like he's not going to do the curling iron.
We'll do the braid.
Oh yeah. He'll do braids. He'll do like whatever, bows and different like ponytail mixes or whatever. But yeah, he's not going to touch the hot tools. Nor do I want him to really. Fair. So, so I did, their hair this morning, which was adorable. So hopefully they'll take their picture this morning. And if not,
I just hope,
who knows?
pictures are earlier in the day than my kids' pictures were.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't even know what time my kids have recess or anything like that. So I'm
fingers crossed.
Sideline parenting. We'll see. So that's my one star. And then I think my five star is this is really lame, but I think just that it's October. August and September were really busy months.
Long. Like September was, felt like it dragged the fuck.
Yeah. And it was just like I got very burnt out in both August and September. And I have some big things in October, but I feel like my days, like during the day, feel much slower. At least right now. So I am hoping that that stays that way and that October is a rejuvenating month. But I'm just glad that it's here. I was ready to move on from summer in Texas, which it's still pretty much summer in Texas.
That's like in Tennessee too. I'm in Nashville and yeah. It's finally, I'll say it's gotten slightly better where it's not, and watch, I'm going to jinx this, but it at least hasn't been super humid. It's still been in the high 80s, but at least I haven't felt like I'm in a swamp. But
yeah,
I'm like, please, just I need.
Will say the mornings have been really nice.
Yeah, like this morning was really nice.
I walk my kids to school every day and it's been like, those have been really nice. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't feel like I'm like a sweaty, drippy mess when I get back.
No. But,
like, picking them up in the afternoon, I'm like, why is it 100 degrees still?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Okay. What is something, Neely, what are you reading or watching aside from the People We Meet on Vacation trailer?
I just want to talk about that trailer.
Okay. All right. Fine.
I need to talk about that trailer. I don't know what I thought it was going to look like. Rachel and I have talked about this. I love that book. I know this is not a Rachel and I have like,
we love that
the most book. Unpopular opinion because any ranking I read of Emily Henry books, that is always the last one.
Yeah.
Every single time. And I'm like, now to be fair, I haven't read all of her books.
I haven't either. I'm like, I love that one, but I haven't read all of them. So I
love that book. And I love Poppy as a character. And so I don't know like what I was expecting.
And I love, what's her name? Who's the actress? I
can't think of her name right now. Our Lady Jane.
Yes.
So, but
rest in peace.
I feel like when an adaptation comes, like I'm always like a little bit like, oh, like, what's this going to be like? And I watched that trailer no less than 12 times yesterday. Like, I think I just kept watching it on a loop. From the opening of her singing the Robin song in the airport, I was like, this is what I am at. Like, yes, this is Poppy. Like, this is exactly what I imagined it to be. And it looks so, so, so good. And I wish it was coming out like next week.
I know. I'm excited. I'm
literally so excited. And also, I've been seeing a lot of clips. Rachel and I have mixed feelings about the off-campus series. We just have a lot.
I haven't read any of them, but I have heard many, many mixed opinions.
It would be written differently now. I'll just say that.
Like, I think it shows its age because it was written in like 2015.
It's not the writing. There's nothing wrong with the writing. There's some subject.
There's some content things. Yeah. That are.
It would quite literally just like not be appropriate, which I have to assume they're changing for the adaptation. Like, I hope.
Yeah.
They're turning it into a series. And I will say what I've seen, like the casting, like I'm like, it looks.
There are some people who are not happy about it because I think they're like diehard fans of the book. But I love everything I'm seeing. Maybe because I was kind of like, we read the series at the time. I didn't read it at the time it was published.
I read it in like 2022. So I mean.
So a couple years ago. And so there was like, you know, some things where I was like, ooh, that makes me a little bit uncomfy. I think the casting is so good. I think they like the dude bros look really dude bro-y.
Look totally dude bro-y. I feel like it will fill the summer I turn pretty hole in my life. But also like, I don't know. I wonder how they're going to do it. Like, because it's like four stories.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay. Like,
is it going to be like a Bridgerton thing? Yeah.
I hope not. I hope it's just like, all of them kind of happening.
I can't remember in the books if they're happening simultaneously or not.
I feel like some of it overlaps.
Yeah.
I think it's been, so, I've read a lot.
Yeah. Like it's been a minute.
It has been a minute, but I feel like there's like a lot of good adaptation things in the pipe. Just every summer after, which I think they're renamed it to every year after. Tell Me Lies season 3 just wrapped. There's just like so much coming.
So much.
So much content.
Colleen, what are you reading and or watching?
Yeah, so my most recent read, I don't know if either of you are Sarah Kate fans, but read her newest book, The Good Girl Effect. It's kind of, it's a second generation of her series, The Salacious Players Club. The next generation, it's so good. She was one of my first forays into like really smutty books. And
yeah.
So,
you know,
so
I haven't read any of her stuff, but I know that people love her. So I really need to.
It's definitely very mean. She also has strong plots, but it is like her books are very, very spicy. So like people, look, obviously I know you, but obviously with the name of the show, you both are smut fans. But like for people who are like on the edge, I'm like, for people who are like, oh, I like less spice. I'm like, don't like, do not read her books. Or like even when like, back when I was like visiting that bookstore in Kentucky with my mom, like I was like, oh, I'll get something when I'm here. And since I'm much more of a Kindle person, and like I read, on Kindle, but I'll get like, sometimes I'll like get particular ones to have on my shelf. And I got
the trophy
to have on my shelf. And I'm like, mom, that's not the one that you're going to, do not look up this book. That is not the one you're going to want to read, but so good. It's like, it's set in France and it's so good. Ooh.
I'm pretty sure I have Prey's physical copy on my shelf and just haven't read it. But I feel like that's one of the ones that's like recommended all the time when like, okay, you're ready to get into something, like you're ready to dip your toes into something a little bit smuttier. Here you go.
Yeah.
So I need to.
Prey's is one of my all-time faves too.
Okay. All right. I'll have to pick it up. Okay, I am reading A Vow in Vengeance, which is by Jacqueline Rodriguez. It's not going to be out until January. We're having her on the podcast later this year, and I think her episode will come out next year. But I am loving it. I'm like, fall to me is romantasy time. And so I've just been reading like one romantasy after another recently. And this one is real. I'm having a lot of fun with it. And I know I'm going to be mad at myself because I know it's going to end on a cliffhanger, as all of these do. And this book's not even out yet. So book 2 is not going to be out for over a year. And so I'm hurting myself on purpose. But the take on the magic system is one of the most unique takes I've seen in a while. It's a tarot system. So like all of their magic comes from tarot cards. And so they like, when they become immortal, basically, or like some of them are born immortal and some of them become immortal. When they do get to a certain age, they draw a tarot and, or like the tarot picks them, I guess. And so then they're like, each one has different powers that come with it and like all this stuff. So it's really like the magic system is super intricate. I'm really enjoying it. And it's a Fated Mates, and I love a Fated Mates. I love a like can speak to each other in their minds. I love that. And I eat that up. So I am loving it. We'll talk more about it when we have her on the podcast, but that's what I'm reading right now. I've been like flying through it. And it's a physical book. Like, I don't ever read physical. I always read on Kindle, but they sent an ARC. And so I was like, I'll read the physical. And even Brian the other day was like, you never read books anymore. And I was like, I read books. You just don't see the book. He was like, yeah, that's what I mean.
Like, my books are here.
I know. I was like, I read books. He was like, that's not what I meant. I was like, all right, whatever. So anyway, that's what I'm reading. That's very good. Highly recommend. Nobody can read it yet. So sorry, you guys. Thanks for listening. Let's dive into the interview. Colleen, we start our interview with what we call your villain origin story. Okay. Sometimes this confuses people, but basically we just want your backstory. How'd you get here? We'll talk more about specifically how you got to writing romance, but like, have you always been a reader? Like, what's kind of been your journey up until now?
Yeah. So I've been a reader and writer all my life. I always lead with And this is one that, like, whenever I say it, I don't mean it in a brag way, although it can come off as it, that I learned how to read when I was 3. And that, like, from then, it just, like, my parents, I mean, read me multiple books every night. And, like, from then, when I knew how to read myself, was constantly, you know, always having multiple books, you know, kind of the stereotypical, would go to the library, get as many books as I could possibly carry. My grandma would always bring me and one of my close childhood friends to Barnes & Noble every week for their story time, would let me get books, all that. Like, that was something that was really fostered in my family. And similarly with writing, I'm in a family of writers and was just always writing, and including my kindergarten teacher, one of the activities we were able to do with free time was that we could write little picture books that she would then bind for us. And because my mom never throws anything away, it's great. I still have 2 of those little books, which is so cute. And then kind of continued that. And in middle school, went to a writing camp for 2 summers. And then in high school, I kind of got away from, I feel like, both reading for fun and writing for fun, just because, I mean, I think for a lot of people, that's also when school can get more intense. And also for me, at the time, my ADHD was undiagnosed, and that was, I never struggled with school until, I would say, really, like, high school, like, math and some science stuff that I was just, like, And I also was a dancer, and so I did not have the kind of free time that I had when I was younger, and so I kind of gotten away from it a bit, like, was still doing more non-fiction-y writing stuff, but so I've, like, grown up just, like, in a family of readers and writers, which really fostered that, just being in a super creative space, but really didn't think I would get to, like, as a kid, I imagined writing fiction books as a job, but then as, like, once I was actually an adult, never really envisioned that I'd get here, but now here I am.
Now here you are. So talk to us a little bit about why you decided to write romance, and then specifically, like, how the story of Ever Since New York came to you.
Yeah. So with romance, it was so, like mentioned in my bio, I'm a therapist. And when I finished grad school and finally had time to actually read things that weren't school things, and I was like, oh, wait, I can read for fun. I had really gotten into the romance genre. And also, I know, you know, similarly for you, Rachel, that I know that you've mentioned that you've found a lot of healing in terms of, like, purity culture stuff and things like that from reading romance, especially spicy romance. And that was something that I found a lot of that, even though, I mean, I grew up religious, but didn't grow up, like, super, super conservative religious, but still also just with our society and how those messages are, regardless of how, regardless of family messaging, that that's just always there. And so I found a lot of healing in that and really enjoyed that, and started, you know, following more of the authors I was reading.
Yes.
And then was just kind of, was feeling more of creative pull. And I had played around with, I was briefly writing some fan fiction that was under, like, totally a pen name, and, like, a few people knew, but basically basically no one knew, but was really, I was having fun with that. And then I was like,
was it One Direction fan fiction?
It was Harry Styles fan fiction.
There you go.
And it is now deleted from everywhere on the internet.
Like, but, you cannot find it.
I'm like, no one will be able to find it. But with that process, I was like, oh, I think I want to write something that maybe, like, I will actually allow more people than just the few friends and, I guess, random internet people who found that. And I started writing it in, like, the end of January of 2024. Yeah, because it was last year. And didn't know what I wanted to do, like, if I wanted to publish it or anything. And as I was writing it, I mean, I guess I'll give a little bit more of the backstory of it. So my husband's a touring audio engineer, and I've also always been kind of in the music realm. I grew up singing. My brothers make music. My mom is very musical, so that's kind of always been there. But My husband and I, we've been together for a bit over 7 years, and we've been married for just over a year now. And through seeing him work in touring, because we actually met when he was on tour, which is a whole convoluted story, but all the time that we've been together, he's been touring, and I've seen like just like the light and the dark of the industry, and especially the dark, and like how it impacts mental health and just all of these different layers. And also that I've gained such a strong appreciation for all the behind the scenes. Not that I didn't appreciate that before, but I think there's just so much that people have no idea all of what goes into it, especially when we're talking about really large scale productions of really high level artists, when they're doing arena tours and they're doing festivals and they're doing all of that. And I also, as a result, was reading a decent amount of stuff within the like rock star musician romance subgenre, and also felt, and I always add this disclaimer that like I always love reading some good drama, but I feel like a lot of times it's drama for the sake of drama. And also, I often can tell when someone doesn't have the background of knowing what the industry actually is, and when someone hasn't, you know, done that research, which like is fine. Not every book has to be like 100% accurate and all that. But for me, I felt like that was something that was a piece that was really missing, and really wanted to be able to show that peek behind the curtain there. And then also with the mental health component, that in addition to being a therapist, I have my own lived experience of an eating disorder, OCD, and PTSD, and wanted to be able to give the kind of mental health rep with conditions that I feel like often aren't featured in a lot of fiction, and also when featured, often done in similarly, like a lot of like drama and shock value of like, oh, I'm going to include all of these stereotypical triggering details just so it's here, versus it being something where, okay, I'm going to show these really challenging moments and these really devastating struggles to show the reality of humanity, and not doing it, okay, if I'm sharing something that's a potentially triggering detail, I'm doing it with a purpose. I'm not doing it just so it's like, oh, there is, you know, XYZ thing. But
yeah,
I really wanted to be able to combine that, because I think, I mean, just as humans, we all have different amounts of struggle. And while mental health surely is being talked about more now than in past years, I think there is still just so much stigma. And I think also eating disorders and OCD specifically, I think are very misunderstood, and again, often represented in the very stereotypical like, oh, I'm OCD and I'm just so neat and organized. Or like with an eating disorder, it's like, oh, someone who is just the exact stereotype of what we see in the media, or it being something that's seen as a vanity thing. And I wanted to be able to show the realities of that. Yeah. And so I was really able to pull those things together. And also it was really important for me to be able to show that the light and dark can coexist, that you can be really struggling while also pursuing your dreams, and also showing like moments where it's like, oh, is this thing going to keep me back from my dream? What do I have to shift here? And also just really enjoyed. And of course, it was a challenging balance to find, but liked being able to bring in some of the technical aspects of music industry stuff, of naming out, you know, a lot of different crew members that people may have no idea what they were beforehand and things like that. Yeah. And consulted my husband far more than he probably would have liked during the process. Yeah. The amount of docs that I have.
Yeah.
I'm like, here, give me the normal person explanation and give me the technical explanation. I have like pictures of different setups and like all the different things, but that's kind of how I got there. And also like the spicy piece that I wanted to, I feel like bringing that in also with, I feel like a lot of my just work on myself as a human, and also as a therapist who works with a lot of people who, whether it's sexual trauma or things with purity culture or just like, you know, biological challenges as a result of how our bodies work, I feel like I've done so much work in, you know, becoming more sex positive, and wanted to also just be able to show that it's like, this is just a part of life and it doesn't have to be bad, and wanted to show kind of the dynamics there. And of course, like, I read plenty of books that have absolutely no spice, and that's fine. But I'm also like, especially considering these characters start as 25 years old and they both turn 26, like, it's pretty unrealistic that they're not going to, like, that's not going to happen. Like, that's going to be, that's going to be a thing. And was
they're
going
to bone. Okay.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, that's just what it is.
Yeah. Give us a little, like, tell for people who are listening, tell us kind of the give us your blurb, I guess, for
Well, I literally have the, book, I have the book here with me, so I can read the blurb. So, Emmeline Levine is a rising pop star taking the world by storm with her childhood best friend, Kieran Hayes, her guitarist and co-writer by her side. With her quickly growing fame and success, Emmeline is learning how to navigate the complexities of the music industry while also recovering from an eating disorder and PTSD. Kieran has dreamed of being a professional musician ever since he first picked up a guitar. Now that he's living that dream, his lifelong struggle with OCD, along with his increasingly complicated feelings for Emmeline, is holding him back from reaching his full potential. Emmeline and Kieran have never been more than just friends, but one night in New York City changes everything.
We love it. He's because you said they're childhood friends, right?
Yeah. Yeah. They've known each other from like when they were born, like their moms are.
That's Neely's like, kryptonite.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's very much like they like grew up like next door to each other. And it's also very much a everyone else has always known except for them. I love it. Yes. Yeah. You know, it's like everybody knows and everybody is like, this is like.
Everybody's like, guys.
They could never
get your shit together.
Childhood friends to lovers. They could never make me hate you.
No, it's it's just so good.
Yeah.
We did talk to somebody one time who was like, I don't like it. And I'm like, I don't.
You're like, oh, I don't understand.
I'm like, especially if it's in romance and you know there's going to be a happily ever after. Like, you know, it's like, you know that it's going to end up good in the end. Like,
I do not love the history. Like,
exactly.
To me, it is the history. It's the inside jokes. It's the, like, he knows how she takes her coffee. Yeah. He knows that her favorite snack is Sour Patch Kids, whatever it is. Like, I'm sorry. I don't understand how people don't immediately just, like, fall over for that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I want more of that. I want to never, ever run out of it.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Okay. So you mentioned briefly that you're a therapist as well. And this is something that I knew already. But for those of you who didn't know, can you tell us a bit about that and how you feel like your career as a therapist and your career as a now a romance author, how they kind of complement each other, and how you feel. And you mentioned this a little bit when you were talking about Ever Since New York and your writing process, but how do you feel like romance writing or reading has impacted your practice? And then also like vice versa, like how do you feel like your training as a in mental health counseling and therapy has impacted your writing?
Yeah,
that was a that was a very loaded question.
Oh yeah, so no, my brain no, my brain followed it.
Okay, great.
Yeah, but yeah. So I mean, I have been seeing clients for just over 5 years. I started grad school in 2019, but started my internship in August of 2020. So right in the heat of COVID was a great time to be just thrown in, very trial by fire. And it is. I mean, I got into which I think. Many therapists, not all, but I would say most, get into this field because of either our own mental health or someone in our lives who struggles a lot. And, you know, I have my own personal history of from, you know, struggled with an eating disorder from when I was like 10 years old, started recovery when I was 19, almost 20. And then I've definitely have had OCD all my life. That wasn't diagnosed until a few years ago because it's one of those things where I'm sure many people can relate of like peeling back the layers of the onion. It's like, oh, here's this one thing that we've resolved. Now here's this new one that was actually that's just hiding behind it. It's like, actually, here's this thing.
Yeah. That's my exact journey. I did not realize that a lot of the things I did were OCD until I was
No, it's like 35,
I think, when I like was like fully diagnosed. And I was like,
Like, oh, wait, no, that's like with my OCD diagnosis honestly came about a lot from I was with clients I was seeing because I also in my work as a therapist, work primarily with eating disorders and trauma and also music industry people. But I was having, there's a really high, I don't know the exact percentage off the top of my head, but there's a really high co-occurrence between eating disorders and OCD, specifically anorexia. And I had anorexia and was doing a lot of evaluations with clients. And when I was going through, there's this one particular assessment called the Yale Brown Obsessive Compulsive Scale. And I was going through it with my clients. And I had, for whatever reason, so many of my clients in a particular like summer, it was so many that were presenting with OCD symptoms. And as I was going through all of their assessments, I was like, oh, wait, here's that one I check and that one I check and that one I check. And then like went to my therapist and was like, so. Here we are.
I think there's a misconception with OCD that a lot of people think like, oh, it's like when you line stuff up in a row. Mm-hmm. It's like when you like things like really clean. And I'm like, yes, like those are facets of it. But there's a whole lot of other OCD behaviors that have nothing to do with the other
ones. Yeah.
But I think like for the majority of people who don't know somebody with OCD or haven't experienced it themselves, like that is in their brain what they align it with.
Yeah.
And I know for me, like that's what I thought OCD was until I had a psychiatrist who was like, no, like, yes, that is, but like these things that you do are OCD.
Yeah. And I was talking with my psychiatrist at one point and he said something about OCD. And I remember vividly being like, no, I don't have to like flip the light switch, you know, three times before I leave a room. And he was like, he was like, some people do, but that's not what, that's not what OCD is. I was like, wait, these thoughts that don't leave me alone. Like that's OCD. And feeling like I have to, I remember I was explaining to him how I had to like, it was, when my oldest was really young and she had a, big like picture up above her crib that was like screwed to the wall and she could not move. Like she was like in the infant stage where like wasn't even rolling over yet. And I told my husband, I was like, I cannot sleep until you take that picture off the wall because it is going to fall on her and crush her. It wasn't even like heavy enough to do, like even if it had fallen, you know, but it was just like these thoughts.
That OCD does not care. No. There is no,
I was like, so she's sleeping and he's in there like trying to silently like get it off the wall. You have to take it down.
Yeah, no, it all goes, so many things go under the radar, which in general, that was my experience with mental health. Because I mean, I didn't start therapy until I was 19, even though I was struggling from a young age. Part of that, one of my brothers has OCD really severe and also has had some more. He definitely has things that aren't the stereotypical presentation, but he had more of the stereotypical presentation as like kind of surface level, which also was what prompted like him getting evaluated and all of that. But so his struggle also pulled in a lot, but it's an interesting job for sure, being a therapist. I think especially being a therapist just in our current world. I mean, obviously there have always been challenges in any society, but I feel like just the world we're living in, our brains aren't meant to take in this much information, this much traumatic information. Yes. And it's really a privilege and a gift to get to work with clients. And I feel like I've learned so much from my clients, and so much more of my learning as a therapist has been from doing this work versus what I learned in school. Not to say I didn't learn anything in school, but I feel like was learning while, and just like learning while going. And it is really interesting having this crossover with now becoming a romance author. And I think for me, I also for a long time really battled with if I wanted to use a pen name or my legal name. Once I decided that I wanted to publish, I was like, okay, what do I want to do? And went back and forth a lot because, of course, you know, like therapists have ethical codes. And also while there are certain things in ethical codes that are really black and white, there are a lot of things that are very much gray areas. Mm-hmm. And so there's not anything that specifically says, oh, someone can't be like a, you know, romance author, or someone can't post anything that could be considered sexually explicit. But there are, especially living in the South, like there are, it's hard when there are like unwritten rules and things. And I am very grateful. I work at an amazing therapy practice here in Nashville. It's called the Guy Center. And I started there as an intern, and now, you know, I'm fully licensed and still work there. And we, as a whole, like, are a very progressive social justice focused practice. And also a lot, not all of our therapists do sex therapy, but a lot of our therapists, myself included, mm-hmm. do sex therapy. And like, that's something that's really integral to us as well. So I feel like I'm kind of have been in a unique position where even like there was like a few years ago, because I'm also do some content creation stuff. And a few years ago, I had done a partnership with a sex toy brand. And like, I think there are many places of work where that wouldn't be something that would fly well for a therapist. But my boss was like, I mean, as long as like you have the awareness that sure, a client could see that if they follow you. But like, it's like, that's just life. And so I'm really grateful that it's always like, she basically has always just come from that framework of go in knowing like a client can see that, but like also it's like giving, I mean, the informed consent is there, and if someone wants to read that, that's like kind of like their thing. And so I think it is something where with the mental health components in Ever Since New York, a lot was definitely pulled from my personal experiences and like things I've seen with other, you know, family members and loved ones. But definitely, I think all of my, because there are different therapy scenes that are depicted in the book that, of course, that, you know, my work. Sure, I think someone who has been in therapy could also maybe write that similarly, but just kind of the depth of the knowledge of the modalities that I have, both as someone who has gone through them as a client and who does them frequently as a therapist, I think was able to really pull that in a more realistic way. But it is definitely interesting that I, for a while, like, I think I, for when I first started, you know, training to become a therapist, I thought for a while that I wanted that to eventually be like my sole full-time thing. And for, you know, a while it had been. I mean, I've always done I did some freelance marketing stuff when I was in college and grad school. And then I've always done the marketing for the practice I work at, but it was kind of, that was always more of the side thing. But within the past few months, I've gotten into a space where I'm not loving clinical work as much as I once did. I think part of that has been with re-embracing writing. And obviously, you know, Rachel, you know that it's a whole thing, and it's a lot of, it's a lot of work. And I think was realizing that I've like felt a lot more fulfilled by that work. And don't get me wrong, there are still parts of being a therapist that I really do enjoy and sessions that I really love and things I'm really grateful for, but I'm in a space where I'm like, okay, that needs to, me seeing clients needs to be kind of more of the side part of it. Yeah. And so I've been like, honestly, within like the past 2 months, I've been doing a lot of like kind of rearranging things with that transition. But I think it's definitely, I think it's something that it's a work in progress, because of course it's also really tricky, especially for indie authors when there are so many unknowns of like, oh, this could be something that takes off, or this could be something that, oh, you invested all this money into and then either, you know, don't see a return or whatever, which isn't like, you know, my goal as a writer. I mean, sure, it'd be great.
Well, if I could
make full-time money, but also, you know, it's tricky.
And I think it's hard because I think you feel like when you're in a creative business, you feel like you should be in it for the creativity, which yes, you are. But like also you have to make money. Like just, you know, how the world works. So you have to be able to like do both of those. And I think it's really, it can be really, really hard to put out the amount of work or the amount of like book work that you have to, like amount of writing that you have to, in order to like continue to be successful in the indie space. And then also have another full-time job. Like it's really hard, and people do it and people do it all the time. But I think you also have to like recognize your capacity. And like for me, that was not a part of my capacity.
It was burning me out too. Then I think it's just, it's hard to balance it. But even, I mean, last year given, last year, it's so many things, because I was also planning my wedding and everything. Yeah. But I think also now with the process of writing another book, I'm like, like it just was, I got myself so burnt out.
I think you look at, when you go to do your second, you look at, okay, like, because I wrote my whole first book while I was still teaching. And like after bedtime for my kids, and like I looked back at that and was like, I can't do that again.
Yeah, it's like,
and
this so, like, does not work. Like, it's
like,
just
it
not,
happened like, and no I did way. It, but like, yeah. Oh, I'm not, I can't do that again.
Yeah. No, and it's so, I think for me is like realizing like the parts of that are sustainable, parts that are unsustainable. And, but I think it also, I think even writing this book and, you know, the rest of the books in this series, I think in addition to what I've already seen from, you know, my husband's experience with mental health in the music industry. And also I've worked with a ton of clients who are also within the music industry, and in the process of writing the book, I think has given me an even deeper passion for expanding that access. Cause that's something, and that's a whole separate podcast that I could do on that. But like, there's just a lot there that I think I could see myself in terms of clinical work. Like, I could see myself being fulfilled by something kind of more solely in that realm. But I think right mm-hmm. now I'm like hoping that, you know, it's interesting with the universe if you never know. Yeah. Like, I know some indie authors are able to financially make that a full-time thing.
It's like
some
a constant shifting,
and it's kind of, you never know. And yeah. I feel like especially with all the like social media platforms constantly mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. changing moment by moment, that's also truly. A whole other game of like, okay, what platform's gonna stay, what's gonna go, what's yeah. going to happen. But yeah. I think they
it's
do
so much
at least
more
right
than
now
just
I feel
writing.
Like the careers do work together, especially with the flexibility I have at the practice I work at. I think there are many, like, because there are just so many different ways you can be a therapist. I can envision so many structures where it wouldn't work, but I'm very yeah. lucky also that like my boss has been super supportive to the point where she actually she's the narrator for my audiobook. She had offered to do that, which was
what?
Really sweet.
That's
like that'll
cool.
yeah. And so that should November, December is when we're hoping that'll release. My husband did the recording and is currently doing the editing, but it's a whole
okay,
it's a whole
wait,
thing.
That's so helpful to know, people, because audiobook production is expensive.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It yeah. takes an yeah. expensive and takes a lot of, it is so many
it's
hours.
It's tedious for sure. Okay, kind of changing directions a little bit. What is a trope that you are dying to write? Maybe it's something that you already have planned for the series, or just something down the line that you're like, one day I will write this.
Ooh, yeah. So in the second book, and because it's basically, this is going to be a series of interconnected standalones. The name of the series is Love on the Setlist, which is kind of a play on Love on Tour, which was Harry's tour. But the second book, and I think I finally decided, because I was like going back and forth, I'm like, when am I going to reveal the title? And I decided I'm going to do it when I have in 2 weeks, I have a party that I'm doing in New York. I decided that's going to be when I actually like announce the title. But basically it has two of the side characters, and that one, the main trope is it's like coworkers to friends with benefits to lovers, and that has been so fun. It is very yeah. different. It's also sapphic, so like it's very different. Nice. Especially compared to like the childhood best friends to lovers is a very different dynamic, and so it's been really fun to write that, because it is so different in a good way.
Yeah.
But that one has been, I feel like they're like, because I have five total, including Ever Since New York, five total books planned in the series. And I feel like there's just something with each of them that I'm like so excited
about. I love a friends with benefits.
I don't
feel lovers
that a ton. So that's fun.
Yeah. I think it's one of those things where it isn't as popular, but I think it gives such good tension, and you get to see like their chemistry oh, yeah. together while they're like forming a more romantic relationship. Okay, well, yeah. you kind of already talked about what you think you're going to write next. So there's going to be five books in the series.
Yeah.
Do you feel like now, this is a Rachel question. This was not in our outline. Sorry, Neely. Do you feel like now, I feel like now that I have started writing, I've got like 87 things that I want to write. Do you feel like
oh,
that?
Yeah.
Or are you like, I
oh,
mean.
Oh yeah. No, it's like, they're just like, and they just like keep adding, because I yeah. think when I was like, I want to say it was when I was somewhere between half and three quarters through writing the first draft of Ever Since New York, the idea for the second book came into my head. And then when I was writing the epilogue of Ever Since New York, the idea for the third book came into my head. And yeah. then when I was on my honeymoon, the idea for the, technically it was going to be the fourth book, will now be the fifth book. And then, like, there have been things where, like, beta readers and ARC readers have mentioned characters where they're like, I really hope they get their own book. Yeah. And
then you, like,
so
rearrange
I wasn't thinking of that, but now I need to, because you're right. Yeah. You know, like, they do need their own book. And I feel like there are just so many, and, like, it's so hard because I'm like, I want to write all of them now.
I know.
But it's just so, it's so hard when there are just so, and also it's like, I'm excited to have where I get to especially because like while Kieran and Emmeline won't be the main characters for the other books, like that we get to continue seeing their story there, especially like, cause the second book takes place more or less in the same timeline as Ever Since New York. The other ones are slightly different. But it's just so fun getting to see the, like, continuation of the characters. Yeah. That it's not like, oh, they're gone forever. It's like, we still get to see them.
I think why people like standalone series so much.
Yeah. Yeah, because you're not leaving those characters. You can read it on its own, but you're not leaving those characters forever.
Yeah.
Okay, any advice for aspiring authors? Ooh. They haven't written or published anything yet, and what would you tell them?
Yeah, so this is one that I feel like I'm getting better at following myself that I very much did not do with the first draft of Ever Since New York is, and I feel like this is very cliche, stereotypical advice, but letting your first draft be bad, which is something that's very hard for me, especially as a chronic perfectionist. Yeah. And I think part of it was when I started writing Ever Since New York, I didn't know if I wanted to publish it. I also had one of my best friends, her name is Grace, she was like my first alpha reader that as I was writing it, I was like sending her chapters as I was writing. So I was like, oh, of course I'm going to like go through these chapters and like read them and whatever. But I think there were so many things I was trying to make perfect the first time versus realizing like so much changes during editing. And sure, the bones of the story are still the same from when I first wrote it, but like so many different scenes that were taken out, scenes that were added, chapters that were added, chapters that were deleted, characters that were added, characters that were deleted. Like, it's just so much changes. Yeah. And I feel like I had so much pressure on myself for it to be like, oh, this first draft has to be that somehow, you know, this could be publication ready, which is like, it's funny when I look back, especially because I have a few friends who read the first draft, which I mean is cool that some of the friends like who read the first draft then read all of the other drafts after, which is really cool. But it's still when I think about it, I'm like, shit, I sent people that. I let people read that.
I'm like, you just have to like, it's that thing where it's like, we got to get cool about some things real fast. Okay.
Oh yeah, like, exactly. I'm like, I promise this will sound better later, but like the amount of times I think now I've been able to write more quickly. And I think it's tricky because I think there also can be a lot of pressure, especially for indie authors to just push out books, which of course, I mean like no shade to people who are able to put out several books a year. Like I could see myself in the future, especially if it was my full-time thing, maybe, you know, two books a year or something, but it's like I feel like, and again, no shade to that, but I think it's just something where I think it's a balance.
Like seven books a year,
it's wild to me. Like, and like I think it's just so tricky because I think it's a balance because I definitely think I've been able in a effective way to write more quickly after Ever Since New York because I've been putting less pressure on myself, like where I've even been putting like things in brackets of like extend this scene or like think of a better name, like because so many times where I'm like, why am I sitting here for 20 minutes thinking of what to name someone's cat instead of putting it in brackets and I will figure this out later.
And my favorite like, thing to do is just like star. I'm like, okay, it's gonna like they're going exactly. to this star is star change. Star
yeah exactly I don't know. Like just having something because I think and I think it is a balance because I think there is also a lot of pressure to just be like, oh, someone's going to write as quickly as possible so they can get this book out. And I think that can also cause problems because I'm, you know, of the belief that like, if I'm putting something out there, I want it to be something that's high quality and not just being like, okay, I'm putting it out there to say I have something out there. But I think really, just pushing yourself to just get the first draft out there.
I was laughing yesterday because I don't know if you follow Kai Stevens, but on her thread, she posted it was like a line, and then underneath it, it just said, like, in asterisks, it just said insert, or it's not insert, that'd be funny. But she was like, actual penetrative sex here, or something like that. And I was like,
yeah. Honestly, I was like, sometimes I love that. You just gotta though, like,
we're gonna be like, okay, like, I'm gonna come back, like, to this later. It's gonna
happen, but like, we will come back to it, or like, I have a doc of like a graveyard of scenes, like, there was a particular, like, I think it stayed until, I want to say maybe the second or third draft, but there was a scene like early in the book that was a spicy scene that was like with, not, you know, it wasn't with Kieran, it was with another guy. And we ended up like, my editor was like, she's like, there's nothing wrong like with what you wrote, but it just doesn't work here. And so I like, I have a doc that's just like a graveyard of, hey, maybe this will get reused for something at some point too, where I'm like, so I think that's the thing of just having to be like, just get the first draft done, because even the most well-written first draft, like, there are just gonna be things that change.
Yeah,
and so it's for like, sure. You can't, and also like, you can't edit it if it's not done. Like, you can't do anything with this book if you haven't finished the draft. It. Yeah.
Okay, the last question we always ask people is, what is a have-to-read book that you are always recommending to people?
Ooh, that is such a good question. Let me think. I guess I'll give a nonfiction one and a fiction one. I would say
that's fine.
Nonfiction, there is a book titled The Happiness Trap by Russ Harris, and it is grounded in a type of therapy that's called acceptance and commitment therapy. Abbreviated as ACT, and it's like, it's very much like client facing. Like, it's one that's like a super easy read, but it's one of my, like, I recommend it to clients all the time, but also recommended it to like literally everyone in my life, because it really focuses on being able, it's very values based and also mindfulness based, in the sense of like accepting your thoughts as they are. It's like, this is just what, and like accepting like life events, like, this is what's happening, and then being able to like make choices in alignment with your values. I think that one is something that's really impactful. And then with fiction, there are just so many. I feel like there's so many good, so many good books, but why am I? And of course now I'm like forgetting every book I have ever read. One that I did really love this summer that I think is also great because it can be a like across age recommendation is actually my editor. Her name is Sabrina Grimaldi. She indie published her first book back in May, and it's called We Are Not the Same. And it's a YA, like summer sort of romance that kind of like takes the classic love triangle and turns it on its head of really exploring of why girls and women are conditioned to like be pitted against each other and compete versus lift each other up. And it kind of, it centers around like a girl and her boyfriend, and then the girl that was kind of always his summer girlfriend at like place, it takes place in Arizona, and it's kind of like a lake community that like his family used to go to every year. And so it centers around those dynamics and how they're like very much like conditioned to be against each other versus it being like just being able to lift each other up. So I feel like that one is great also because it is like across like ages is appropriate. But I feel like that was it's kind of like also very much like for people who love The Summer I Turned Pretty, but also like me, like, I mean, which I absolutely adored, but also who get extremely frustrated by the like some of the like toxic plot lines. Like, it very much takes like those vibes, but also in a way that it's like, hey, like, here's what we're actually going to do with this.
Love it. Yes. Okay, we've got a rapid fire this or that for you. Ready?
Yeah.
Okay. Neely, do you want to start or do you want me to start?
I'll start. All right.
Okay.
Nashville or New York?
New York.
Easy. One Direction or Harry Styles solo?
Ooh. I'll say One Direction.
Okay.
It's a hard one. It's a hard one, but I love all the boys.
Date night out or chill night in?
Chill night in.
Okay. This is a pick your praise. Good girl or look at me?
Good girl for sure.
Yeah.
All right. Fine.
It's so good.
It is. Yeah. It will always get me.
Okay, Colleen, whore yourself out. So where can people find you?
Yeah. So on all social media, my like Instagram, TikTok, Threads, all that is at Colleen M. Werner, because when you're traditionally verified, Instagram doesn't let you change your username ever. Like if you do the meta verified thing where you pay for it, like those things, but because I was verified like before that was a thing. So it's Colleen M. Werner instead of, yeah, instead of Conklin, it is my maiden name, Werner, but I'm active on
forever and ever and ever
TikTok and Threads. Yeah, unfortunately forever. Yeah. That is just my username, but I'm on there. I also have website ColleenMConklin.com, but I would say social media tends to be the best spot to find me. And like, I have all the links for the book and like updates and all that on there.
Beautiful. And you can find us everywhere at Smut Show Podcast, and you can find me everywhere at Rachel_M. Lewis.
And you can find me everywhere at Neelykins, except TikTok, where I'm Neely Moldvan.
And Colleen, thank you again so much for coming on. And thank you guys for listening. And we'll talk to you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye.